Citizens of Lenora Hills, grab a pair of skates and a Surfer Boy pizza, because it's time to go into the Upside Down. What's going on, Vecna Knights? Welcome back into the Upside Down, the bi-weekly podcast where we talk everything Stranger Things. I'm your host, Damien, and with me today, the Argyle to my Jonathan, the great Scott.
Ahoy! Hey, what's going on, Damien? I'm so pumped to be back with you here talking Stranger Things 4. It's been a long wait, 3 years, but it was totally worth it. After watching episode 7, it was so intense, I did have to seek medical treatment, but I am fully recovered and ready to discuss everything with you.
Just pop a couple old school Tylenol like Max and you'll be perfectly fine. I think I forgot something real quick.
Ladies and gentlemen, he has a thinking cap on. Dusty Bun's hat. For those who can't see live in the studio.
Yeah, dude, I had to get this. And I'm fully, totally getting a Hellfire Club t-shirt too. I have to after watching this. Volume 1 was like crazy, man. Like you said, we waited 3 years for it and I watched it in like 9 hours. And yeah, then I just sat there. We both had different viewing experiences for it. I mean, I know I was sleeping downstairs because my dog had got fixed and all that good stuff. So he can't like climb up steps, or he couldn't. He's good now. And he had me up at like 2:15. And I'm like, you know what? I was going to try and wake up at 3 anyway. And I said, I'm just going to stay up, put on some coffee, like get myself ready to go and then just watch it. And the first two episodes, it was still dark outside and it was really freaky. I'm like, hey, dude, why don't you like come a little bit closer to me? Like my dog would do anything if Vecna came for me. But I just kept chugging along, man. I did take some breaks because I was working and stuff, but I finished it probably around close to like 12:30-ish. And then I started the rewatch later that day. So, and some people out there haven't even watched an episode yet, which to me is just wild, but dude, so good. I mean, you know, we're going to talk our overall thoughts right now. I'll let you go first, because it's like hard to even formulate a sentence to try and describe like the season.
It's so true, man. And that is true dedication on your part. I actually finished by Saturday morning. Nice. So it took me about a full 24 hours, but I think this is my favorite season so far, from just volume 1. The endings of episode 4 and 7 literally had me on the edge of my seat. Like Katie walked in, opened the door, and she took a photo of me sitting on the edge of the chair, like in awe of the ending of episode 4 while Max is running up that hill. But I'll have to share the photo on Twitter. But I mean, it's insane. I mean, the scope of everything was huge. It's beautifully shot, beautifully edited. The music is amazing. It may top seasons 1 through 3. And I think, like I mentioned, the ending of episode 4 and especially episode 7 just completely blew me away. I mean, I had chills, goosebumps all up and down my body, and it was amazing, man. I think I'm still recovering, like I mentioned at the top of the show. So really looking forward to see what the final two, if the final two episodes are even better than this. I don't know where they go from here. I'll probably have a full-blown heart attack.
I mean, will season 5 be as long as season 4, or is that just like a casualty of the pandemic, a happy accident from the pandemic, something good that came out of it? Because yeah, dude, like I don't know how they're going to top it, like you said, man. And this was only 7 episodes, we still got 2 more. It, like from music to acting to cinematography to the like just the gore and the horror, it was like dialed up. I think for me it's probably my favorite season. Definitely my favorite season since 1. Not that I didn't enjoy 2 and 3, because I really did, but they kind of got it back towards its horror roots. And dude, the gore in this was just like, oof, it made you so uneasy. And it was just like, oof, it was terrible. Like you felt so bad for some of the characters. And I mean, the performances from, you know, our originals and the newcomers were just all awesome. And it was just great, man. It was really, really great. And it is, long as it is an easy rewatch, because I think the first time you're just taking everything in. But then the second time, you can just sit back and maybe peek for different Easter eggs or look for certain things and maybe pick up dialogue that you didn't pick up before. So for me, it was just absolutely amazing. Like my mind was completely blown by the end of it. I don't know how I functioned the rest of the day. I was still working and I'm just like thinking about all this stuff. I'm like, I have to go read some articles. I have to go on Twitter. I have to go on Reddit. I got to read stuff about this right now. And it was just wild. Such a wild season so far. And the best part is we have this hype now and these rewatches to take us into July 1st because we still have a couple more episodes. So
I can tell you had to seek medical attention as well. just crazy, man. I think you'd sent me a text at about 12:30 in the afternoon and you were like, what a volume, amazing. Volume one was insane. And I knew I could just tell you were itching to talk about it. And I was like, hold on now, partner. Like I only watched like 3 or 4 episodes so far. So take it easy now.
Hey, take it easy, sweetheart.
Whoa, take it easy, sweetheart.
That's just our overall thoughts. Definitely let us know what you guys think. We are on Instagram at Into the Upside Down Pod. We're on Twitter.
Yes. Only 15 characters. So we had to go at Into _ Upside Down.
Hey, we work with what we got here, folks. We do what we can. And then, yeah. So, you know, we'll be posting all kinds of videos probably from this pod and random stuff. So definitely let us know what your thoughts were. Now we're going to get to the format for today's show. So we're going to start off with top moments from all of volume one. We were initially going to do 2 episodes at a time, but I just think that would have been a little rough and we might've been stretching for some things at some point. So I just think it's easier to just, like most people, binge the whole volume, talk about our top moments of the whole volume. Then our top performances, best new character, because we had a lot of them, predictions that we got right from our previous episode, predictions that we got wrong from our previous episode. We're going to do some yes, no questions. We have a surprise question in there that pertains to the ending of chapter 4. And then just a real quick preview of what we're going to do for our next episode, which will be episode 4. So with that being said, let's get into top moments. Scott, I'm going to turn it over to you.
Yes, sir. For my top 3, coming in at number 3 was from the very first episode. And I absolutely loved it. It was the ending of the scene where Erica was playing Dungeons and Dragons with everybody in the Hellfire Club. You know, you can't spell America without Erica showing up in her United States flag and Lady Applejack character. And then also simultaneously that matched up with Lucas getting the winning shot for the championship game. I just thought it was such a feel-good moment just seeing them win simultaneously and seeing their respective friends celebrating around them. Even Eddie Munson's reaction, I don't know what he was doing, but it was absolutely hilarious.
Dude, I love how he just like bows down to her.
Yes, the so bow. Cool. It was amazing. Just giving them props. You know, Lucas and Erica, I think sometimes they're kind of like background characters, and it kind of really, you know, thrusted them to the front of the line with so many other great actors. And something really nice to see right before Chrissy had her eyeballs ripped out. So, yeah. That was a great, great moment.
Rest in peace to not a stereotypical like high school cheerleader. She was very there. She was a sympathetic character for sure. Dude, I had that on my tops too. I just loved the back and forth between the game, between D&D, Detroit Rock City is playing from Kiss. Once again, another great song choice. And I really liked the parallels, like you said, with the Sinclairs having the upper hand and having their moment, their big moment. It was cool. I loved everybody in Hellfire Club, how they were selling like, don't do it. Don't roll the dice. You're not going to beat Vecna. And Dustin's just like, no, we got this. And he drops a Han Solo line. Never tell me the odds. I love that. Yes. And then for Lucas, he was wearing number 8. And he actually said that the actor Caleb McLaughlin said that he chose that as a tribute to Kobe. So that was pretty cool too. So yeah, I had that one on my list as well. What else do you have?
That's so cool. I didn't know that about the Kobe reference. So props to Caleb there. Yeah. So number 2, I listed when the Byers family home was raided by Lieutenant Colonel Sullivan's rogue military people, it just cracked me up because in the middle of this like gunfight, you just see Argyle driving up to the house in the Surfer Boy pizza van, just rocking out to some sweet music. And his first thought when he sees all the SUVs out front is that the buyer's family didn't invite him to the party that they're having. Just so awesome. And another thing I wanted to say is I just saw on Instagram with Sean Levy, the one that actually directed this episode, and he's an executive producer of the show. He showed a couple of the background scenes of how they filmed that all in one straight take from the time they left their bedroom until I think they came out to Argyle's car.
They used that was a phone, right? He was just literally like using a phone for that.
Yeah, I was thinking the phone was probably like just to test it, and then maybe they came in with like the actual like Steadicam or something.
Yeah.
But yeah, really cool to see how they were just kind of like working through the motions and seeing how the shot would all come together in one straight take with so much going on. I mean, that's a lot of action happening in one take, but just kind of topped off by Argyle driving away after they all scream at him, you know, to drive. And then he, you know, proceeds to smash into every trash can along the street. So just a great mix of comedy and action all at the same time.
That scene kind of reminded me of Pineapple Express, where you have like James Franco and Seth Rogen, like they're having dinner at Seth Rogen's girlfriend's house. And then the other like drug dealers bust in there. And he's just like, you know, James Franco being the stoner, like the bigger stoner in that movie, just like freaking out, like what is going on? But also like kind of being oblivious to stuff. And they're saying they need to get snacks and food and fruit roll-ups. And it's like just the comedy and the action of it was so good for that one. So one for me was just the Vecna killings. And I don't mean to like sound morbid, but it was so jarring. And I'm not a big horror fan. Like watching Stranger Things is probably the closest I get. And every Halloween I'll watch the original Halloween movie. And that's like it for me. And I watch Are You Afraid of the Dark, which is a children's show. So definitely not into gore and horror, but it wasn't too bad in this season. But man, the first one with Chrissy was just like, holy crap, like bones are cracking, the eyeballs popping out of her head, like it was just like so scary. And the way that Eddie was selling that was just like, whoa. And then, you know, obviously Fred was just, nobody knew where he was, so there was that. And then Patrick was freaky because he gets pulled under the water, pops out of the water. And I love that like Jason immediately thinks that it was Eddie that somehow did that. And now it's like a satanic cult that's running wild in Hawkins. So the Vecna killings were just some of my top moments just because of how gruesome they were. It was really, like I said, really bringing it back to the horror elements from season one. Not that there wasn't gore and stuff like that in seasons two and three, but it was just, it was brutal. The bone snapping thing was, oh, and then of course, obviously, Vecna's mom. Whew, yeah.
Totally, man. Watching that scene with Chrissy at like 5 o'clock in the morning in the dark was a truly freaky experience.
Dude, I watched it three and I'm like, I should not be watching this, but now I also can't go back to sleep. So I might as well just chug on through the rest of these episodes.
Chug a pot of coffee.
And eat my pizza with a fork and a knife.
All right, man. So yeah, for my number one, I'm gonna have to go with the huge reveal, something that you and I pretty much straight on called last episode. We pretty much predicted this almost exactly. Was that our character of Peter Ballard, aka Henry Creel, aka number one in the lab, aka Vecna, The whole entire scene was insane. I mean, the revelations of him being number one, and I was like rooting for him for about 30 seconds. I mean, he's taking out the military police,
right,
and kind of helping to free Eleven from the lab. And I'm like, wow, this guy is amazing. Like maybe he isn't Vecna. Like maybe he's just going to help save her. And then within about 3 minutes, I realized, yeah, I was totally wrong about that one for a few seconds. And you see that actually it was him that in fact killed all of the children. So that entire scene and the reveals there were just epic. And then Eleven realizing that she can't side with him and has to take him out as an 8-year-old child, I mean, just absolutely incredible. I mean, the music there, they brought back the music from season one and two, from like when she saved the kids out by the quarry. And
yep.
I think they also used it in season two when she came back for the first time and met up with everybody, you know, and saw Mike for the first time so many months. They brought that song back, you know, you see her remembering everything. Brenner's like, okay, it's happening right now. I mean, I don't know, man. It's just, I had a loss for words. Like, I think I had chills for about 30 minutes after that. So
that was like, that's an awesome number one. And that monologue was so good. Like, it was so long, but I love that they had the ability to do that with the runtime, because it just wrapped everything up. Because we're watching, we're like, okay, who's this character? Like, what's his purpose? And you think he's just another upside down monster. Obviously, we theorized like he was Peter Ballard, or there was, he maybe that like he could change forms, or he gets possessed, or whatever the case was. And then we get the reveal that he's one, which was crazy. And then he was basically nerfed with that microchip, and he manipulates 11 into getting her to pull it out. Then he goes on the rampage and she pushes him in the upside down, which was, as far as we know, the first opening, first portal into the upside down, or, you know, and obviously the first time we saw it, gets struck by all the lightning, becomes disfigured. It was almost kind of like Palpatine, like Emperor Palpatine, how he like kind of from the electricity becomes like grotesque. And that reveal was just so good. And he's a great actor too. He's a really, really great actor. So that was an awesome reveal. And I love that they just let it breathe. Like, they just let it go and took their time. It wasn't like Scooby-Doo where he pulls off a mask and he's like, it's me, I'm Vecna, it was me all along. Like, it was just awesome.
It's so true. I was worried about how 11 would get her powers back, and like if it was going to be lame or not, and this was the complete opposite. I mean, it's just amazing how they made it all come together with the Peter Ballard, Vecna, Henry Creel, and number one reveal, and then 11 remembering everything, getting her powers, and then basically creating Vecna all in like a 15 to 20 minute span. It was just absolutely amazing.
My number one, like I was saying, chapters 4 and 7 were just like crazy for storytelling, crazy for reveals, and crazy for drama, like really tense drama. Dear Billy, you know, Max goes to Billy's grave. She's basically accepting the fact that she's going to die. And she gives letters to her family, to her friends. And then she wants to read one to Billy. And then Vecna at that time goes into and takes her into the dreamscape, like his dream world, whatever we'll call it. We don't really have a name for it yet. And then we think she's okay. She's done. Like, Max is going to die. And she's just walking around his lair, seeing the other bodies of Vecna's victims. And then we hear Running Up That Hill, which is already number one on iTunes. I've listened to it a bazillion times already this weekend.
I was going to guess 37, but wow, a bazillion.
Well, I'll let everybody know when my my top ones from Spotify come through at the end of the year. That's probably going to be the number one, along with like Tarzan Boy. And
another song from volume one.
Right, exactly. So, I mean, that song was just like so perfect, though. The lyrics, like switching places, like she wants to take Billy's place. She feels so guilty. And then she's run up that hill away from Vecna to her friends. And, you know, obviously because of Creel, we know that the weakness to Vecna, or at least something that can deter him, is music. And just, you know, your favorite song, bringing back favorite memories and things like that, can counter all of the terror that Vecna has. So Sadie Sink was awesome in this scene. And they actually showed behind the scenes photos too of her. Like, they actually really did lift her into the air. And it was in like an actual cemetery. Like, they had her. So like, it wasn't just like with tons of pads on the ground with a green screen or anything. Like, she was literally suspended in the air, probably for multiple takes, which is terrifying. Just adds to the dedication of her being under Vecna's trance and everything else. But that was it, man. End of chapter 4, that whole sequence, Vecna not getting his kill, was just so cool. And it just opens up so much potential for how they can possibly defeat him.
Man, after seeing everything that she's gone through the last year with Billy, you know, and living in now the trailer park, and her stepdad leaving, and, you know, obviously now having these headaches and nightmares and things like that. Like, it was so nice to just see her like remembering all those good moments, you know, from her life with all the gang from Stranger Things. Like, I'm not gonna say, you know, I was crying, maybe had a little bit of a tear in my eye, but when she broke free and ran away, I was like, I think we were all cheering as much as we could.
Dude, she has to be up for an Emmy for just her overall performance in Volume One. It was so good. It was just awesome.
Just everything. Like the moments when, you know, when she's sad, she blows it out of the park. I mean, it's amazing. And then when she's happy, like when she's, you know, being sarcastic with Dustin, it's amazing. Like the way that they're playing back and forth with each other when he's trying to get her to join the Hellfire Club. Like, and then, you know, when she's terrified, she looks the most terrified out of anyone on the show. She's just was amazing this season.
And most importantly, when she's hugging Vecna wearing a flannel shirt.
So wait, I went back and watched that scene and I was like, okay, like it's, you can't really see like the face and the shirt at the same time. But when you see the photo, once again, we will have to tweet it and put it on our Instagram. It cracked me up.
It was so fun. Yeah, I'll have to dig it up tonight and post it on Instagram because that's just, I get it that, like, you know, she thinks she's hugging her mom and then it turns out to be Vecna. But just, like, Vecna in, like, a homemaker, like, just normal person every day flannel shirt. It's just so funny to me.
It looks like he's ready to, like, mow the lawn or something.
Or, like, throw a bale of hay somewhere. Who knows?
Start up the tractor, Becky.
Oh man, that was so good. Do you have any other tops?
Yeah, I mean, I, you know, Max's seat was right up there as well. I mean, I didn't want to duplicate you know, moments, but that was probably the top of Volume One by far. And other than that, I mean, there were so many funny moments I could touch on. I did really like when Argyle and Jonathan came home to dinner and Murray was cooking. Just to see Jonathan's reaction, it was the happiest I've seen him in the entire series when he just goes, "Hi, Murray." He looks so happy.
His character's been like a total transformation from kind of like the very standoffish, awkward kid to gaining confidence and dating Nancy, and now like being away from her and being stoned all the time with Argyle.
And I just love that he asked Argyle, like, "Hey, can you pass the olive oil?" And Argyle's like, "That's wine."
And then they're talking about the skates, like, "Oh, he hit her with like a stone skate," or "She hit her with a stone skate." And it's like, "No, I think it's wood." And then eventually they come to the terms that it's like rubber.
They're just like so confused.
And Murray's just like, "I still don't know who this is."
That's because every time Murray's there, Argyle can only say, "She got smacked."
I would love a, like, just a spinoff of Murray and Argyle. I don't know how you would, what the story would even be, but they did say that there's going to be spinoffs to Stranger Things. So
yes,
I mean, we need some kind of weird something there. I guess it's funny. I mean, I have a ton of time, like, literally all Volume One to me was a top. I really didn't have any negative moments except for the bullying stuff. I really like Angela is like public enemy number one, I think, for most Stranger Things fans, aside from Vecna.
No doubt.
But yeah, I mean, with that being said, let's get into top performances. And I narrowed it down to three. That was very hard because there were so many good performances in this show and in the season, in this volume. But yeah, so since you went first last, I will go first here. So 3-1, number three is Grant Goodman. So Grant, yes, Goodman was the member of the Hellfire Club with the greatest facial expressions in the world, literally. In school, when they're like, "Oh, well, Lucas has his championship game," he's just like, "What?" And then during the campaign, he's selling it like it's like it's life or death, like it is the end of the world if they do not defeat Vecna. He's like, "Don't roll the dice," and he's like, time out, like, he, for, you know, a character to only have so many lines and make them so memorable was awesome. And then I did research on, I was like, who is this guy? I got to find out who he is. And he was in a movie with Will Ferrell and Zach Galifianakis that came out in 2012 called The Campaign. And he was one of Zach Galifianakis's kids in the movie. And everyone on Twitter is like, I just realized that this guy is the guy from The Campaign, and my mind is blown. And everyone's just sharing his facial expressions all over because they were so good. Like, they were just so funny, so on point. And he was my number three in terms of top performances, just because he was awesome. And the one thing that I do feel bad for him about is that he's listed on IMDb as freak number one. Like, come on, give him a name. Come on.
Come on, freak. Come on, man. We can't just call our guy Grant a freak. I mean, give
him a and yeah, he's commented on stuff we posted on our Instagram, and super nice guy, really nice guy, really happy for him, because he's obviously getting a ton of attention, and well-deserved, because he was awesome in the two volumes. There are two chapters that we've seen him in so far. And obviously with the witch hunt going on in Hawkins, undoubtedly we're going to see him again in the last two episodes. So hopefully everything turns out good for his character. We'll see. But yeah, he was my number three. Yeah. Obviously Sadie Sink Max was my number one. I got two more. So I had Murray, who was promoted, I think, this season to a regular, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And he was just great, from like flying all the way to California to help Joyce, being a black belt in karate, and his action sequences were awesome. And then him just going full on like cosplay as Yuri, getting into the facility, you know, rescuing Hopper. He had some really funny moments and some really badass moments in this season. And I really enjoyed his character a lot. And it's so funny because, you know, he goes 1 minute from wearing an apron, making risotto, to doing karate on a plane 10,000 feet in the air to hijack it, take it over and get to Russia. So he was definitely one of my favorites. And then Hopper was amazing, because this is the first time we've really had like stone cold sober Hopper. You know, season one, he's taking pills, he's drinking all the time, you know, and he kind of just carried that on through the last two seasons. And now he does not have access to any of that stuff. And he has to face all of his trauma with his daughter, with 11. So both of his daughters, things with Joyce, you know, disappointments, you know, and things with his dad. So he really went through it, and you saw a huge jump in evolution with his character in volume one. So I thought he did so good. And just the fact when he got to like the little sanctuary hideout spot, breaks open all the crates, and he finds peanut butter, and he's just like the happiest I've ever seen anybody to eat peanut butter in the history of the world. And he's like, oh, I got a TV, I got all this. Like, he was just so good. It's still going to be an uphill battle for those guys, because they're still in a Russian base, like a Russian prison. There's still a Demogorgon. I don't know if it's going to get out. I don't know what's going to happen there, but he was definitely one of my favorites by far in volume one. So yep, those were mine.
Dude, Hopper is awesome this season so far. I know we didn't get much into talking about Russia so far in volume one, but I thought it was so cool as well when he stole the lighter from the guard.
Yes.
Watching it in my second rewatch, I noticed, like, okay, he's been keeping his eye on this guy with the lighter. And just the fact that he was going at it with our guy Enzo, aka Dimitri, I think his real name is. Dimitri's like, was it all worth it? You know, why did you do all this? And like, Hopper's just sitting there laughing, basically with like broken ribs, like, yeah, like Demogorgons hate fire. Like, yeah, it was worth it. He's like, don't make me laugh. He's like, try not to laugh.
Dude, that scene was cool, man, to see. Dimitri was another good character too. I think the Russian storyline doesn't get talked about a lot because it was kind of just like kind of disjointed from everything else going on, because like everything going on in California relates to eventually 11 and finding 11 and 11 getting her powers back. And then everything in Hawkins obviously relates to trying to figure out what's going on with this new threat. So those kind of intertwine a little bit with each other. The Russian storyline was just completely on its own. But I thought it was good because it was a nice little break from the stories in California and in Hawkins. So let's do it all.
I'll just run through it.
We'll do it live.
F it. So yeah, man. So for my top performances, I mean, these are all you know, ones that everyone are going to pick, but obviously we already talked about Max. I mean, she just stole the show. She's got to be number one.
Yep.
But we can't forget our girl, 11, mm-hmm. Jane Hopper, man. She, I think from the arc that she took, even in volume one, from getting bullied and not having her powers, like, it was just heartbreaking to see her out in the middle of that quad and, you know, trying to use her powers against Angela. And then when she realizes it doesn't work, they're just laughing at her. And it was, oh my gosh, I think, you know, my heart was ripped out of my chest, but to see her come full circle and remember, you know, everything that happened in the lab and realize that she, you know, created, you know, Vecna, which is a horrible thing, but, you know, got rid of him in our world after he murdered all the children. I mean, she, it's just crazy to see how that arc went, you know, from the beginning to the end. And then my other top performance was Vecna, was one. Peter Ballard, Henry Creel, whatever we want to call him. I mean,
001, Peter Creel.
Shaken, not stirred. I mean, this guy basically played how many? Three different characters all in one. Yeah. I mean, to go from just being like a nice, friendly, orderly in the first couple episodes to just showing like how sinister he can be in such a quick turn of events. He just blew me away this season as well. So I have to give that to my guy, Jamie Campbell Bauer, was such a great addition to the cast.
Absolutely. All right. So we are going to get on to our best new character. And I picked one and I was going to put him in top performances because I thought he did absolutely good. Great. Tremendous. Spectacular. Good. Great. Grand. Wonderful. And that would be the new character, the head of the Hellfire Club, Eddie Munson. And for me, that initial monologue he had in the cafeteria, I was kind of like he's just a little out there. But then his interaction with Chrissy, like, she was genuinely happy talking to him. They had a really great conversation. Him just doing the whole entire D&D campaign with Vecna, him selling the horror of what witnessing Chrissy and Patrick get killed by Vecna, and then just him being kind of like a shut-in hideout, trying to avoid any kind of, you know, chaos or any kind of, getting arrested or possibly killed, and then finding out about the Upside Down and all this other stuff. So he has been a really great breath of fresh air into the Stranger Things world. So my best new character was Eddie Munson.
I love it. Eddie was such an awesome addition. Man. And I'll just go opposite of you. I'm going to have to take Argyle.
Yeah.
He just consistently cracked me up during the entire portion of volume one, and some very much needed comedy relief. Yes. You mentioned Mary. I mean, Mary was so funny as well. And thank God for Mary, because there were some very intense moments and Mary helped break that up. Mm-hmm. And I think Argyle was the same, you know, in the United States and, you know, particularly the, you know, the California storyline. So I'm going to say our boy Argyle. I love the surfer boy pizza whole theme they have going on, that he can, you know, come with the van and pick them up, scoop them up whenever they need it. And I think his phone call, when he answers the phone for the pizza delivery, just put it over the top. The fact that he says everything is all natural except for our pineapple, which comes in a can. Don't knock it till you try it.
I love that the cops are just like, all right, sure, whatever. Like, yeah, we'll take some pizza.
They're like, yeah, can we just put in an order? Why is this guy doing like a 30-second like upsell right now?
he's doing an elevator pitch for pizza. It's like, listen, we called you.
Yeah, like, I didn't cold call you, all right? Like, I want to order pizza, please.
Yeah, Argyle and Eddie have been so good, man. And I hope they both make it out. I think Argyle's safe. I'm pretty sure he's safe. Like, usually the stoner character is just so oblivious to everything going on around them that they typically survive. But Eddie's like in the thick of it with all this stuff, with people thinking he's the leader of this cult and he killed these people. So I don't know how he comes back from that. But, you know, we'll talk about that stuff in our prediction episode, which is next. But talking about predictions, we had some in our last episode. Were we right or were we wrong? So right predictions. Scott, you go first.
Yes. So I would say, I think some of mine were wrong and some of them were a little right. Maybe some we don't know yet. I think first I predicted that Eleven would turn evil, which we obviously haven't seen yet. But you know, I will say, since she's been in part of the Nina Project, we've known since season one, she always refers to herself as possibly being the monster. She touched on that again this season. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of like, hey, like, no, you're not the monster. Like, actually, number one killed all these children, not you. Like, don't worry about it. But Dr. Owens did mention, like, hey, we can't go too quickly in this process, or you can get lost into the darkness. And then when Eleven's regressing, they do kind of try to get things moving a little faster. And I think Owens even says, like, hey, you know, how quickly did you skip ahead? Like, how much time did you skip? And Brenner was like, hey, you wanted progress. So I don't know, man. I don't know. It seems like if they go too quickly, she may get lost to the upside down. I don't know. Maybe we'll still come true. But so that, I don't think that one has been correct yet, but maybe will come true eventually. I did say it would be a huge time travel season. Totally blew that one. although it is interesting, they said in the upside down, it's still stuck on November 6th of 1983. So maybe we will get some type of time travel in.
I mean, technically you were right, because that is time travel.
Yeah.
They went from 86 to 83. So I would mark that as a right ski right there.
Okay, I'll take it. I'll take that. My third was that basically Vecna would use time travel and go back and kill everyone in Hawkins' lab, kind of like a Terminator type storyline, which wasn't necessarily true. But hey, I mean, I guess Vecna sort of was the guy that killed all the kids, if we count you know, number one is Vecna at that point. So, you know, maybe that's kind of right a little bit. Maybe I'll get some credit there.
What if, like, they face off with Vecna and they're like, Vecna, he's like, my name's Henry Jerks, because they call him Vecna.
Please refer to me by my given name.
It's Mr. Creel to you peasants.
It's so weird. Like, I looked him up on Wikipedia and it's like, oh, like, Henry Creel is now like 40 years old. And I'm like in 1986, I'm like, right. Wow, that's just so weird to think that like Vecna is like a 40-year-old man. Like, he looks like he's about 4,000 years old.
Yeah. Dude, the prosthetic process for him, I was reading up on it. It took him 7 hours to get into the makeup. And then an additional hour, he wanted to be left alone to like get into character. And then once he was done his filming for the day, it took another hour to take all of that off. Like, that's just dedication and crazy, like, crazy process. Because they said he's 90% like prosthetics.
Yeah.
So that's just, it's wild, man. That's just.
It is some dedication. Like, Jamie Campbell Bauer just absolutely blew it out of the park. I love that guy. Right. So those are my rights and wrongs, I guess.
Okay. So I definitely did better in this category. I did think that Peter Ballard was going to be Vecna. They did try and pull the wool over our eyes and say that he's an orderly and that he worked at the mental hospital, because it's on the official Wikipedia. But it turns out that he works at Hawkins' lab as an orderly, and yeah, he's tired of seeing people get mistreated, AKA the kids. And then, you know, Brenner obviously was public enemy number one for him, and it was just crazy. So I nailed that one. I thought it immediately, because we just had zero info about Peter and about anything of him aside from one photo, a little snippet, and that was all we got. The second prediction I had was Brenner helping Eleven get her powers back, so I was right on that one too.
Nailed it.
That was a pretty chilling scene, because, you know, she trusts Owens. Like, she definitely trusts Owens. But then you just see the pants and the shoes, and then they pan up and it's Brenner, and she's just like, and she tries to run away, but she doesn't have her powers, so she's just rendered to submit. She can't do anything. So that was pretty cool. Now, one that's, it's not right or wrong yet, because we don't really know. My third one was that the Demogorgon that the Russians have is the OG Demogorgon from season one, and we just don't know. But I do think I might be in the wrong here, at least the way that Hopper was talking about it during the dinner scene where they're all having like their last supper. He's like, oh, I fought one of these before. So it's like one of these, which means there could be more, but we've only ever seen one as an audience. So that's still kind of up there. We're not really sure if it's right or wrong yet, but that's one that's, I guess, a maybe. Maybe they'll explain it in the last two episodes. But I mean, you know, 2 out of 3 confirmed is definitely good. So I was really happy about the Vecna one, because that's, I usually get nothing right. So the fact that I got the Vecna one right, it's like, boom.
Dude, nailed you it. Were awesome with those. I think that's a great batting average. I mean, 2 out of 3. I mean, we'll take that.
I'm was getting better than Schwarbs right now. Come on.
We need some more Schwarb bombs. Dude, when speaking of the Demogorgon. Okay, so Hopper says, I fought one of these before. When did that happen? When did he fight a Demogorgon? Like, he shot demo dogs like underground, but
I think that's what he's thinking. Maybe he just lumps them into one thing, you know? It's the only thing I can really think of. Because he did. He mentioned, he's like, I fought one of them before. They don't like fire. And I'm like, what? I'm like, I just don't, I don't know.
That was a great, you know, assumption that he made, but I'm like, wait, I don't think he ever really fought a Demogorgon itself. And then, you know, if he had that knowledge, he probably should have taken like some flames down with him with 11 in season 2. But anyway, I don't know. Just a silly point. Oh, I do want to bring up, Damien, other quick predictions you made just aside from those is that you did think that Mrs. Driscoll would return, and it was an awesome prediction, and I think they totally blew it.
Come on, guys. I didn't need to see a fake baby crib burning in a fireplace. I need to see Mrs. Driscoll with lemonade welcoming into the neighborhood saying, hello, my name is Doris. How you doing? Here's some lemonade. This is my husband. He's still alive right now. Yeah, I was kind of hoping we did get a little bit more with the Creels. Like, it was a good flashback, especially from Victor's standpoint, which also I should have put in top performances, because Robert Englund was awesome. Like, he just started off as just shut up, I'm not talking to the press, blah, 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 to just being so open with them about his whole entire life story and his experience because they believe him. And then he's just kind of cowering and whimpering on his bed to the point where they can't even make out what he's saying. So he was awesome too. Honorable mention for top performances, but yeah, no Doris Driscoll. What, like, why?
Seriously, man.
Where's the world building in this show? Come on.
But I did want to also mention another prediction you made was that we would hear Hulk Hogan's theme song, Real American, with Hopper breaking out, which could still come true. And I did want to bring to your attention that when Murray gets in the taxi cab at the airport, I don't know if you noticed, he gets in the taxi and the driver has a Hulk Hogan trading card hanging from his rear view mirror. Oh my God,
I did not notice that.
Yes. So is it a tease for later on? I don't know. It could be some foreshadowing.
Oh man. That might be, if I got that one right, That would top my Vecna correct one for sure. Oh man.
I'm sad about Mrs. Driscoll, but if we still get Real American, that would, you know.
I'm just glad we have any wrestling reference. Like, it was huge. It was huge.
I know.
Hulk Hogan, I gotta go back and watch that now.
Yeah, and Rinkomania kind of sounds like WrestleMania. I don't know.
Rink, like egg mania.
I do love good egg mania. We can get an egg sandwich next show. We want to get sponsored by Egg Mania.
They're or great. Rinkomania, if they're still around here.
Yeah, I think they're in Lenora Hills, California. We'll have to look it up in the yellow pages.
All right. So yeah, those were our predictions. I think overall we did pretty good.
Yeah, you much better than me, but it's all right.
Hey, we're a hive mind here on the show. Okay. So they're all of our predictions. Just don't ask me to walk away from my 4th of July barbecue to go to some weird steel mill.
All right. I promise. Friends don't lie.
We're going off the rails here, folks. All right, let's go. So we are going to do our segment that we just debuted last episode, and that is yes or no questions, rapid fire. And then we have a special question at the end that I will ask and we'll go from there. Okay, so I will start here. Scott, yes or no? Will Angela get got?
I have to go yes on this. And I hope 11 is the one that does it, of course, again.
All right, number 2 here. Will we see 8?
Yes, I think so. Okay. I hope so.
Will the Upside Down be revealed to Hawkins?
Oh, that is a great question. I think yes, it will.
Is the Mind Flayer going to return in Volume 2?
Yes. And I don't know if people have seen it yet, spoiler alert, but in the teaser for Volume 2, you do kind of see it for a few seconds. And it was a little eerie. Looked like it was locked up.
All right. Do you think Eddie will be guilt-free or, you know, not held accountable of any satanic cult charges or any of that stuff at the end of Volume 2?
Wow, these are really great questions. I think he will not be cleared.
Okay. Yeah, I'm with you on that one. I just don't know how they do it. Yeah.
Yeah. I would love to see them do it, because I think if the Duffers can do it, I mean, they can do it if anyone can.
Will we see Bob Newby return, possibly in a Joyce flashback from Vecna?
Wow. Oh, man. Okay, so real quick, I'm wondering that myself. If people, like the characters in Russia that are all, like, it seems like Vecna's only affecting people in Hawkins. So Right. Will they all be able to come together in the final 4 hours of the show? Will Vecna be affecting others that aren't currently in Hawkins? That will be very interesting. And I'll say yes.
Okay. Screw it. I am pro Bob Newby, as everyone knows. So cool. All right, then. You do your yes and no's now, and then I'll do the final question, the surprise question.
Sounds good, man. So I wrote this before we started the show, but I was going to ask you, have you listened to Running Up That Hill more or less than 37 times this week?
Yes. Yes.
All right. Someone that's been missing in Volume 1 is Mr. Clark. Do you think we'll see him rent a movie in Volume 2?
No.
Oh, man.
I'd love to see it, but...
You think no appearance by Mr. Clark?
Yeah, I think the cast is so big.
Man.
I know. I would love to see Mr. Clark. I bet Hopper would, too, after Joyce hung out with him. Instead of going to Enzo's.
Hopper's got some unfinished business with Scott Clark. Great first name. Okay. This is a very important question. Would you rather have Scoops Ahoy ice cream or Surfer Boy pizza if you only had one choice?
One choice for sure. Surfer Boy pizza.
Nice. Hopefully Argyle will deliver it to you.
30 minutes or less.
Okay, if you saw Angela skating at your local Rinkomania, would you throw a banana peel in front of her?
Well, that's assault, brother.
If we need a yes or no.
No.
Nah, my guy doesn't want to get arrested by Lenora Hill's police like Jane Hopper did.
Unless Owens can come and just clear my record. He's like, yeah, don't worry about that. We'll take
yeah, that'll just go away. Owens is awesome. Okay, and finally, Damien, when Vecna walked into Chrissy's house and was seen for the first time, fully from head to toe in Volume 1, first time we saw him, did you go to the bathroom in your pants?
No, I had evacuated previously before starting chapter one. So I was okay at that time.
Oh, okay.
But I did pour myself a large glass of wine. I felt it necessary.
was it a mega pint?
I did not. Although if I did have anything in the tank, possibly. So we'll leave that one as a no for right now.
Okay, I was just wondering, our fans, it was a fan question.
All right, so this was a fun one that we were talking about. So you start getting headaches, and then you have a vision of your mom or my mom yelling to us about something that we screwed up on or didn't do, which is probably something minor. And then we hug them in a flannel shirt, and it ends up being Vecna. And then we end up in a dream world. And your friends are trying to get you out of that and bring you back into the real world out of Vecna's grasp. What is the song they would play on your Walkman WM-8 to pull you away from Vecna?
Okay, so if Vecna has me, his hand is grasped around my face, I would really love to have someone put a little pair of headphones on me.
I didn't know we needed props for this bit. What is going on here?
Well, you have a thinking cap on, for God's sakes, all right? I need a prop. I'm going to put on my headphones, and I need to hear Huey Lewis in the News, Power of Love.
Oh, and when there you go.
When that little,
portal thing, the Doctor Strange portal.
When that portal opens up, I need Doc Brown to roll up in the DeLorean. I'm going to jump in, and he's got to gun that baby to 88 miles per hour. Bam, we're out of there, man. Vecna, sorry, bro, not today.
And Vecna's just going to watch on, like, what?
He's going to go like this with his claw, and like some huge vine is just going to wrap around the DeLorean. Doc's going to be like, just like, you know, when those streamers were attached and he got struck by lightning, got sent to 1885.
Dude, I know we talked about this question earlier. I did not even think that you would pick that, but it makes complete sense that you would. Like, I didn't know what you would pick, but that makes complete sense that you would pick that. So I love it. Mine would be one of my favorite song of all time, literally. And I just don't know why. I think it was because I saw the music video as a kid so many times. You Can Call Me Al by Paul Simon. And the music video was just so good. Him and Chevy Chase just in a room, lip syncing back and forth. They dance with like the trumpets and the trombones. It's like the easiest music video ever to shoot in the world. But the fact that Chevy Chase was in it, and at that time, I was watching all the National Lampoon movies and stuff like that. So I think that's why it's a song I love so much. Plus, it's awesome. So mine would be You Can Call Me Al from Paul Simon. And the portal would open. And Chevy Chase would say, "Hey, Yellow Belly." And then I'd start running. And he'd get distracted and be like, "Russ, Russ." And then he'd be right here. And he'd be like, "I'm right here, Dad." He'd say, oh, hey, there you are.
He'd yell to Vecna, be like, "Hey, underpants."
So, yeah, that would be mine, man. I love that we picked very obscure 80s pop songs. But, hey, we're talking 1986 Hawkins here. So, need a little Huey Lewis, need a little Paul Simon in Stranger Things.
No doubt, man. Dan.
Do.
That is a great call, man. I know you love that song, so it would save you without a doubt.
Well, also, a friend of the show, Jeff McDevitt, is a big fan of that song at karaoke as well.
Yes, I heard it live, and it changed my life. It actually made me a fan of that song, and then I found out that you really liked it as well. So it's now, I think, in my iTunes library. I downloaded it from LimeWire.
Yeah, there you go. I downloaded it from Napster, and Metallica still tried to sue me for it, even though it wasn't their song. All right. So that was fun. So on to our next episode, which we are going to be releasing obviously before volume 1 or volume 2. We want to give everybody a chance to listen to it, chance to share their thoughts with us on Twitter and on Instagram. So we're going to be talking about pretty much theories, predictions, what we want to see in volume 2. So 9 hours with volume 1. Then we get a 1.5 hour episode-ish, and then a 2.5. So 4 hours for volume 2, which is going to be pretty good. Although I kind of feel, even though it's 4 hours, I feel like we're getting cheaped out on, because we just had so much to watch and we're getting like just this much. But I mean, they're both going to be pretty much feature length movies. So it's going to be pedal to the floor, nonstop action, nonstop drama. It's just going to be awesome, man. I can't wait to see what's going to happen. And we're officially under a month away, which is nice. So July 1st, man, I can't wait. I tell people all the time, I'm like, yeah, I do a podcast for Stranger Things. They're like, wait, what? And we're getting up there in views. And we appreciate, of course, everybody listening to us. And following us on all of our socials, Into the Upside Down Pod on Instagram and on Twitter.
At Into_Upside Down on Twitter. And please like us, follow us, subscribe, you know, leave us a review. It all helps. And we really appreciate you. Leave us, you know, your comments and we can talk about it on next week's episode.
And also, guys, definitely share your theories for Volume 2. That way we can maybe share a couple listener theories or listener questions. That'd be kind of cool to do, leading into the prediction episode. So that's what we got for you. That was fun. That was a lot. It's definitely by far our longest podcast that we've done, just because we had so much to unpack, so much to talk about, so much to react to from Volume 1 of Stranger Things Season 4. This was a blast. My name is Damian.
And I'm Scott.
And we will catch you next time when we go into the Upside Down.
See you, nerds.